Solitaire Rose Novelcast, After the Fall, Episode 8. I've noticed from the statistics that we are gaining new listeners. Please go back and listen to the early episodes, as this is a novel in audio book or podcast form. A few things for the new listeners. This sound is the sound of transition. This is in a book where it would show that you are moving from one scene to another. So when you hear this, know that you are in a new scene. Second, this novel is near its conclusion, so I need to figure out the last few things I need to do in order to create an ebook for Amazon. It will be added after this one is over. The next novel will be All In, which is a very different novel. There are no horror elements. It is a humorous novel, it is a coming-of-age novel, and it's a novel about poker. So I hope that you stay tuned after the fall for All In, the things you need to know for this episode. After the Fall is set 5 years after civilization has fallen due to a zombie infestation, or a zombie apocalypse, however you'd like to call it. Civilization has fallen, humanity now lives in small pockets, and we are following a group of survivors, some of whom have discovered the fact that there are zombies now, at least one, who can think and talk. We have three women: Wendy, Alice, and Angela. Wendy was holed up in a farmhouse, but was talked into leaving by Alice and Angela, and at the end of our last episode, she was violently killed by the talking zombie, whose name is Eddie. They're investigating an abandoned plantation home, which is the home of Charles and four children. Charles was a partner of Vic, who was killed by Eddie, the talking zombie, as well. So our cast of characters is slowly coming together. And now, After the Fall, Episode 8. Angela heard the gun go off in the woods and shouted, "Alice? Wendy? What's going on?" When there was no reply, she dropped her backpack, as she'd seen Wendy do, and started around the fence toward where the gunshot had come from. She was in a full run when she got no reply from her shouting and heard no more shots. When she got around the fence to where it had went into the woods, she stopped and shouted, "Wendy!" again, as loud as she could. She heard sounds from down the hill, but there was no reply. She started to walk toward the crest of the hill slowly, making sure to keep her eyes open, when she heard something running at her from the right. She swung around and dropped to one knee so she could aim better and said, "Don't you fucking move!" before getting a good look. It was Alice, who put her gun barrel up in the air and yelled, "Don't shoot, it's me." "Shit," Angela said. "Did you hear anything from Wendy?" Alice shook her head, and they both looked in the direction of the hill. Angela stood up, put her gun in the best firing position, and started walking slowly toward the crest again. Alice was quickly by her side. When they got to the crest, they saw a single zombie lying on the ground, its legs shattered by a shotgun blast. They walked down to it slowly and looked at it for a moment. It used to be a woman, and it was dressed fairly well, meaning it was a zombie that had risen from a funeral home of some kind. Its long black hair was matted and in knots, the dress shredded below its knee, the face a gray parody of a smile. It was clutching at the ground, trying to pull itself toward them, its hands digging so hard into the ground that it was coming up under its grasp. Angela looked into its dead eyes and felt her stomach quiver in nausea. Suddenly there was a loud report next to her, and the head of the zombie turned into a black mist that splattered on the leaves behind it. The body slumped to the ground, and all movement stopped, with none of the twitching that a human body did when it died, probably because it wasn't moved by nerve impulses, but something far more dark and sinister. She looked at it longer, not able to look away, until Alice nudged her shoulder and said it wasn't her. She wouldn't have turned so quickly. Clothes were different, too. Angela nodded dumbly, and then they started to look where the shot that blew off the zombie's leg must have come from. They walked in the only direction they could figure out till they found a mess on the top of the leaves and dead grass. There's blood on the ground, more than they thought was in a human being, and it was red. Zombie blood was black. This had been a human. Wendy. They both knew it, but neither of them said it. They looked at each other and then looked around a bit more. They found a rifle by the side of a creek. More blood on the handle. No body, but Angela thought that they might have dragged the body away. She knew that that would be odd, since most of the time zombies ate where they killed. But one of them had been hurt. Maybe they felt they were in danger. There were no drag marks, though. None of it fit, but they still didn't talk. They looked in the creek for more clues of any kind, but there was nothing. They searched until the sun started to go down. And Alice looked up the hill and said, "We'd best head up to the house. It looked safe when I walked around it, but it will take about an hour to make sure there are no zombies inside." Angela nodded, then the full force of what had happened hit her. Wendy was dead. Dead and gone. And if they had just left her alone, safe in her little farmhouse, she wouldn't have died here alone, surrounded by the dead. She'd been the one who'd convinced Wendy to leave with them on an adventure. And no one was supposed to die on a simple little adventure. Charles had heard something walking around upstairs and motioned for the kids to keep quiet. They had holed up in the basement after they'd given Vic a funeral pyre, and he was trying to break it to them gently that they needed to move on. He knew that Jesse knew, and Rich, who was 10, left his parents while they were still alive, seemed to be packing his stuff up quickly every morning. Martin and Sarah were both younger and would ask at least 20 times a day when they were going to move back upstairs where it was safe. They had brought down a couple of board games, a lot of books and coloring books when they went down to the basement, and Jesse had helped Charles secure the house as good as they could. Charles wanted to talk to Jesse about the fact that the zombie who killed Vic wasn't like all the rest. It was intelligent. It could talk, plan, and was planning something. And he knew deep in his heart that it wouldn't leave until they were dead. Of course, he worried that if they left, it would follow him. He listened in silence as he heard the footsteps above them. The children were all silent, knowing that if there was noise above them, it wasn't good. He listened until he heard the steps get close to the door, and he motioned for them to hide in a small closet in the basement as he grabbed a shotgun and went over to the stairs. They all shut the door, and he turned the lantern down so that he could just barely see shadows around him. The children were silent, looking to Charles for what to do next. All of them had been through something like this before. He listened without breathing until he heard a woman's voice say, "God damn it!" so loud that it could be heard through the door and down the stairs. The footsteps went away quickly, and whoever the person was who was cursing upstairs had run away, and he waited a good 5 minutes before lowering the gun and telling the children it was okay for them to come out. They waited another half hour, and when they heard nothing, they made a quick meal and ate it in silence. When they were done cleaning things up, Sarah spoke for the first time that entire day. "Why didn't we let that lady in? She can't be a zombie if we heard her talk." Charles saw Jesse shoot her a dirty look, but instead of giving Jesse the same kind of look, he said, "That lady came into our house when it was all locked up. She might not be a nice person." Martin got up to get a coloring book and said, "Vic would have let her in." "Vic's not here anymore," Jesse said, pissed off and not caring who knew it. Sarah started to cry. Rich said, "You are such an ass clown. Now you've got the baby crying." "I'm not a baby," Sarah said between sobs. "Hush," Charles hissed. "We've all got to be around each other down here, and this sort of fighting would just make things worse." He walked over and picked up Sarah, who was fighting her tears now, trying to seem more mature than she was. "I miss Vic too, honey. There's not a moment I don't wish he was here. It's okay to cry when you think of him. We miss a lot of people. And when we cry, it's a way of making it not hurt so much." The next thing he knew, Martin had crawled into his lap and was grabbing at the collar of his shirt. "I miss him too, but I don't want to cry anymore. I cried all the time when I was left alone, and it didn't do any good." At that point, Charles actually wanted to cry, but instead he hugged the small child close and waited till he got up on his own and went back to his coloring. It was probably close to an hour later when they heard footsteps upstairs again. This time it was easy to tell that it was more than one person. He couldn't figure out how many there were. He also didn't have to tell the children to hide. They were already moving quickly to the hiding closet, closing the door by the time he was up and creeping toward the shotgun he'd left by the stairs. He went up the stairs to the door as quickly as he could without making any noise, and tried to figure out just what he could do. He couldn't open the door and surprise them, since it would leave the children at risk if they got the jump on him. If it was scavengers, they wouldn't leave until they got the basement open. The final thought he had is if it was more of the intelligent zombies, they really had no hope of getting out for a long time, since zombies didn't have to eat as much as humans for some reason. He remembered hearing about a jail in Texas where the prison guards left the prisoners to die as civilization was falling. And 6 months later, a person found the place. The zombies had dropped into a kind of suspended animation. They started to stir when they could tell humans were near. He thought about the food stores they had, and it was easily 3 months' worth in the basement, but there was only a few days' supply of water. They'd gotten complacent and never replaced the water that they had come to the basement to get, instead of getting it from the creek over the hill or one of the nearby wells. And because of that, they only had a few days, a week at most, that they could really hide down here. He closed his eyes and wished for the millionth time it had been him instead of Vic, since Vic was so much better when the pressure was on. Charles was not a leader, and didn't like having to be one. He was the one who did what needed to be done, asked questions, and then cleaned up the messes. Vic was the one who decided that they would take each child, staying that together they could provide a better home for them than anyone else could. Charles thought about them cowering in the closet in the basement, not knowing that they were due to run out of water. A better home. Maybe if Vic had been the one who slept, and he'd been the one who'd gone downstairs for a drink of water, they'd all be in better shape. He heard a loud bump on the other side of the door, and heard two muffled female voices. He couldn't make out anything they were saying, but he could tell that they weren't near the door. It was just hard to tell how far away they were, but it was easy to tell they weren't in the hallway leading down to the basement. He listened a bit longer, and heard the voices getting farther away, so he went down the stairs quietly, but quickly, and crept over to the closet door. "Jesse," he hissed. Jesse came out from behind the fake wall they had erected in the closet and said, "Yeah?" "I need to talk to you out here, away from everyone." Jesse looked confused, but did what he said. He walked over to a large tool cabinet that they had in the far corner of the basement and said, "I have another big shotgun in here. If you need it, this is where it is." "What are you talking about?" Jesse said, all of a sudden looking again like the scared 12-year-old instead of the mature young man he'd seemed to be when they cleaned the kitchen after Vic's death. "There's someone in the house. It sounds like two women are there, but it could be more. I need to see if it's women, or if it's more of those zombies like the one that..." He paused, feeling the emotion welling up in him again. Just like Martin, he didn't want to cry anymore either. "Just like that one. I need to make sure." "No, you don't," Jesse said, his voice cracking with emotion. "Just stay down here and watch the door. They'll go away and leave us alone if you do." "I can't," Charles said. "We've only got a few days' worth of water, and if there are more of those intelligent zombies, I'll have the jump on them. And if they're people, maybe they'll help us." He saw tears start to well up in Jesse's eyes. In the dim light, they reminded him of blood for some odd reason, and he hoped he wasn't having some sort of horrible premonition. Jesse grabbed him and hugged him so tight he could barely breathe. They didn't say a word as Charles walked back to the stairs with Jesse walking closely behind. Charles picked up his own shotgun and walked slowly up the stairs, stopping right by the doubly reinforced door to listen. He could hear the voices, even further away now, and closed his eyes. He could stop right now, he thought. Just say no, give up on this, and wait it out like Jesse had said. But if he did, what if they died of thirst? Or worse. He had to act. He said a quick prayer to Vic's spirit, hoping it would watch over him and protect him. He felt guilt and shame over the fact that no one had been there to protect Vic when the end came. No one. None of the children heard anything, and he hadn't heard anything. Vic died alone, and it was all his fault. He would not let the same thing happen to the children who'd been entrusted to them by their parents. He just wouldn't. He looked down the stairs at Jesse, and the very dim light from the lantern he'd left out made his face appear in half shadow. His hair was blonde, very thick, and what could nicely be called a bowl cut. He He'd hoped that Jesse would be able to hold it together while he went out the door. Otherwise, he'd come back. "And how do you know you'll come back?" his brain screamed at him. "How do you know you will come back alive?" To all the kids, out of control and upset. He loosened the bolts holding the planks that braced the door in place and slowly slid them out of the way. By the time he had lifted the planks off their holders, he couldn't hear the voices of the women anymore. He took a deep breath, made sure his gun was ready to fire and fully loaded, and then opened the door quietly. He slipped out of the basement and shut the door behind him. He could hear Jesse putting up the wooden planks back into place, sealing up the door. The only way to get through that door was to blow it up, burn the house down, or get the children behind it to open it up again. The basement was at the end of a small hallway just off the kitchen. He crept down the hallway, making sure to keep his ears open, listening for any sort of sound at all. The house was nearly dark, and it was easy to tell that outside it was twilight. He got to the end of the hallway and swallowed. He poked his head out so he could look in the kitchen and through the kitchen window. He was able to see two women, one black, one white, both dressed like soldiers and having short buzz haircuts, looking toward the woods near the fence. He crept over to the kitchen door and locked it, then walked quickly through the dining room and into the living room where the front door had been left wide open. He shut it and locked it as well. Then he heard one of the women say, "I heard something in there." Her voice a nasal southern twang, and sounded as if she was highly stressed. He hit the floor and crawled behind one of the couches and hid. He was able to see them walk to the front door, their guns ready, looking as if they were ready to kill something. Maybe it was the military clothes they were wearing, but he didn't think they would be the kind of people to ask a lot of questions. They didn't have the dull gray skin tone that the zombies did, but after seeing the one that could talk and run, he was just about prepared for anything. He watched through the window in the front door as a white woman pulled something out of her backpack and knelt down. She seemed to fumble a bit, and he could hear the door rattle a bit before coming open. The two of them pushed the door open, but stayed outside. "Who's there?" the black woman said, her voice sharp and harsh, demanding answers immediately. He waited a second to see what they would do, and then said, "What are you doing in my house?" He cocked the hammer back on his shotgun and tensed, getting ready to jump up and do something. He had no idea what he would do, but he would do something. "Your place," came the southern accent. Then he heard the two of them talking, but they were doing it so quietly he couldn't hear them. "Yes," he said, feeling a bit more confident, "and I don't want people breaking in. I have a gun here, and I'm not afraid to use it." "Don't worry about that, buddy," the black woman said. "We've got guns, you've got guns, everybody's got guns. We just stopped here to find a place to sleep, and our friend went missing in the woods. We'll put our guns down if you put your guns down." He waited, and then saw that they tossed their guns on the ground where he could see them. Cautiously, he got up and said, "Okay, putting mine down too." Placed his shotgun on the ground and hoped it wouldn't be the last stupid mistake he'd make in a series of stupid mistakes. As soon as it was on the ground, they came into the doorway, and he looked at them in the fading light. For all their toughness and how they dressed and looked, he could see that something bad had happened to them today. He felt a slight twinge of shame and said, "Come in. You could stay with us. I'd like to have some other adults in the house." They both looked confused when he said that, and it gave him a smile, the first one he'd had since he'd seen Vic in the grip of that thing. Interlude 3. Transcript of First Down with Phil Mattson, August 15th. Guests: John Leitner, Captain Richard Paulson, and Lillian Allum. Host: I'm Phil Mattson. Let's go for a first down. Tonight, the only story we seem to be covering anymore is the terrorist attacks on the U.S. They started in Missouri, but now are spreading to the neighboring states. The footage we are getting from them is simply horrifying. Some of the video shot has shown people who were pronounced dead getting up and attacking people. And in some cases, well, there's no nice way to say this, so send the kids out of the room, eating people. Biting them, tearing up their skin, and eating them. We aren't showing that here on CSNBS, but our competition is, and people are panicking. Today, the president said that he has the nation's top scientists working on a way to counteract the terrorist biological weapons, and is asking Congress to grant him powers above and beyond the ones they approved just 2 weeks ago in order to have the military replace police departments and put the nation in, I never thought I'd say this, martial law. Let's see the footage. Video clip of the president's speech. host. I have John Leitner, Senator from Illinois. Welcome, Senator Leitner. Good to be here, Phil. Host. Captain Richard Paulson of the St. Louis Police Department. Nice to have you here, Captain. Paulson. Nice to be here. Host. And finally, military spokesman for the White House, Lillian Allum. Allum, thanks for inviting me, Phil. It's good to see that you're keeping the lights on here. Host. Yes, we are. The news that over half the cable channels are being shut down for use as emergency channels is something we talked about last night. Are the people in the White House going to allow us to keep broadcasting? Allum. Of course, we would never do anything to abridge freedom of speech. It's one of the most important rights in the Constitution. Leitner, I find it amazing for a president who has suspended major parts of the Constitution can say that they would never abridge rights. I have taken literally hundreds of calls from my constituents telling me about their property being seized, the military taking over places of business. Crosstalk. Host. Terrorist attacks. We here in the news business are still waiting for the proof we were promised 2 months ago that would prove that Iraq was behind this. How do we know this isn't just some excuse to have the military in the streets running things? Allum. That is just more paranoid dissemination from the liberal media. They don't understand. America is under attack. The United States is at war, and we have to fight back using every weapon at our disposal. Not to be rude, Phil, but we have the enemy in the streets attacking normal citizens, killing them, and you want to keep the military from protecting Americans? Paulson, that's not what you're doing. Crosstalk. Paulson, leader told me we were to turn in all of our weapons, go home, and stay the hell out of their way. We didn't even have that bad a problem until the military showed up. We had a good system of making sure the dead were processed as they came into the morgues, and people were taking out the ones that were roaming. Now they just seem to be increasing, and the military is more concerned about making sure people stay in their homes. Host. Reports are coming in from all over about that. I hear that when people try to go north, they are stopped at state borders. I don't care what's going on. Don't people have a right to move about the country freely? I mean, you know, it's true that zombies can't take the cold, but what's wrong with waiting it out in a cabin in Frostbite Falls, Minnesota? Or Canada? Allum. Canada has closed its border, and we're looking into military options to reopen the border for essential trade. And the reports of people not being allowed to leave their states is pure liberal fear-mongering. Why are these people allowed to spread their stories collaborating with the terrorists? Is your network reporting that? Leitner, they should report it because it's true. You can't just lie on TV like that. In a security briefing 2 days ago, crosstalk. Leitner, not right, and we in Congress will fight you on this. Host, I haven't heard of anyone being killed trying to leave their state, but there are more and more reports about it every day. Is the White House saying these stories aren't true? Allum, we have turned back people who are not able to prove who they were so they could not pass a criminal background check, which Congress approved, by the way, and we have had to arrest a number of suspected terrorist agents. Paulson, people who disagree with you aren't terrorists. Allum, if we tried to arrest everyone who disagreed with the president, we wouldn't be able to function as a nation. Leitner, we aren't. Over 1 million people arrested in the past 6 months. We're building prison camps. Prison camps, and not allowing reporters of the Red Cross to see them. What is happening in these prison camps? Paulson, they're killing the people there. That is what is going on. I lost two officers who told a soldier they wouldn't give up their guns because they were going to protect their home, and they were arrested right there. Allum, that is an unfounded rumor. Paulson, I saw it with my own eyes. That's not a rumor, lady. That's truth. Host, everyone needs to calm down so we... Crosstalk. Allum, nothing yet. These things are making rivers of blood, and not just metaphorically. They kill and kill and kill, and a bunch of inbred morons with guns won't be able to stop them. You people need to shut up and do what you're told, or you're going to lose this country. Leitner, if we do that, we've already lost the country. Allum, we should have spent more money to get rid of you, you censored. If they listen to me, you'd have a shaved head and be censored zombie chow. Leitner, it's your fault. All of you. You did this. Not a bunch of Arabs who want to scare people with. That's why you're locking everyone up. You did this to us. Crosstalk. Host, we have lost our satellite feed, so we'll go to commercial and see if we could get any of our guests back on the air. Transcript ends. During commercial, CSMBS bandwidth was procured by the U.S. government under the LIFE Act for use as an emergency broadcast channel. And there you have it, a shorter episode. We begin our next chapter with our next episode coming in 2 weeks. Novelcast has ads, just like every other podcast in the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, and here they are. This, as well as every other podcast on the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, is sponsored. And if you want to visit all of our sponsors, go to crazycomics.solitairerose.com. That's the mothership, crazycomix.solitairerose.com. It's got our Amazon store. You can go through our Amazon store. The prices are the same as if you just went to Amazon, except they let us wet our beak a little. It's got our other sponsors like Gray's. It's got a Dollar Shave Club, and it's got Joe's eBay site. It's got Jen Wicked's Patreon site. You have signed up to be one of her Patreons, right? Well, if you haven't, pause this podcast, go right over there. Be one of her Patreons. That way she can make more art and be on the podcast more often. Go to Joe's eBay site. He throws in free stuff. Now, if you want to support the Solitaire Rose Network, go to our sponsors, including our number one sponsor, our sponsor from day one, DreamHost.com, the best bar none web host in the whole known universe. That's DreamHost.com. If you use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, you save $20 off your first year of web hosting, and you need a website. We have a new sponsor, and I'm very happy to have this sponsor, and they are Bombas. Bombas have some of the best socks in the whole known universe. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. You want to know why I'm happy to have Bombas as a sponsor? Not just because their socks are great, but because for every sock you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or a crisis center. We've got all sorts of podcasts. These podcasts are stories about life, about comics, interviews with people, fiction. It's go listen to them all. Listen to Crazy Comics and Stories. And if you're already listening to that, listen to Solitaire Rose Radio. And if you're already listening to that, listen to Solo Joe. He'll put out another one. Really, he will. And our newest podcast, novels.solitairerose.com. It's Corey turning the novels he's written into audiobooks. It's new, it's exciting. Go over there, listen, subscribe. Another way to support us is to subscribe. Subscribe using YouTube, subscribe using Stitcher. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's Corey Strode at YouTube. That's where we're putting up the podcast every week. Every time a new podcast comes out, and we put up a new video of it. Give us a good review. Review us on iTunes, review us on Stitcher, review us on anywhere. Pass those links along. Let people know about it. That's how you could support us. I got some people over Christmas who said they wanted to send me something. That's wonderful. It's beautiful. Thank you so much. But if you really want to support the website, you really want to support the podcast, you want to show us the love, you want to show us you love us, tell everyone you know. Go over to Jen Wicked's Patreon site, subscribe to her stuff, go to Joe's eBay site, buy your eBay crap off of him, go to our sponsors, and tell them, hey, I heard about this on one of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts. We love hearing from you. You can email us. We have a new email address at solitairerosenetwork.gmail.com. We've got a phone number. You could call or leave a message, and we will play it on the air. And that number is 952-856-0519. And we're all over the Facebooks. You want to support us? When we put up a new episode, share that link. Let people know. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, wake the kids, shake the dog, let the dog know. Maybe the dog wants to listen. I don't know, when I had a cat, she loved listening to me. She would come out here and she would sit right at my feet while I would record, looking at me, begging for treats. Maybe your dog, your cat, your goldfish, I don't know, if you got a pet monkey. Okay, if you got a pet monkey, I want to hear about it. Give us a call, send us an email. But support us. Do it that way. We love you, so show us some love. Thanks. I would also like to announce that I have started a fourth podcast. That's right, we have Crazy Comics and Stories under crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also in that feed is Solitaire Rose Radio, my solo podcast, which mostly plays in the world of comic books, but sometimes veers off into other things. That's in the same feed. Then there's this one, the Solitaire Rose Novelcast. But there is a new podcast. It is the Weekly News Update. The Weekly News Update is a short news parody, much like a news broadcast. And you can get it over at weeklynewsupdate.solitairerose.com. It is the newest member of the Solitaire Rose Network, and I'd like to tell a little bit about how it came about. Back in the mid-90s, I started an email list where I would make fun of what was going on in the news. I'd take a news story and make fun of it. And I often talk about how the first one that I made fun of was when it was found out that one of Bill Clinton's advisors, he had hired a Republican to help him. And this Republican was caught with a prostitute. And the advisor was actually trying to impress the prostitute by reading Bill Clinton's, not Bill Clinton's, Al Gore's speech. Before Al Gore gave it. That's how he was showing the prostitute just what a powerful man he was. And me, I can't think of anything less erotic than reading an Al Gore speech. And of course, I made fun of that, sent it to friends. They said, oh, that's good. You should do more of that. It grew into a weekly email newsletter that at one point had over 400 subscribers. I created two pilots for National Public Radio. They went with other shows, which those shows are no longer around. And in 2006, I very quietly retired it. I have now brought it back. You could go listen to it. There is a pilot episode and a new episode, and one will be dropping every Tuesday morning. Your 15-minute update on what's going on in the world, filtered through the Solitaire Rose weirdness. Go over there, listen to it, subscribe. It's going to be on iTunes. It's going to be on Stitcher. It's not there yet because, as you've listened to other podcasts, I did have a couple medical setbacks that took away a lot of my prep time. But it's over there. Just go over there and listen. You'll really enjoy it, and it's short. As I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks with the next part of After the Fall.